It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
He was licking me.
What?
He was licking me!
This man ate until he burst.
I'm tainting meat.
It's feeding time.
I'm Darren.
And I'm Mindy, and we are the Rance Macabre, a part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of the Rance Macabre, please visit fangoria.com.
So on today's Lunch Hour Reviews, we're going to be covering The Invitation.
Yay!
That comes out soon, April 8th.
Yes.
It's directed by Karen Kusama, who directed Girl Fight, Aeon Flux, Jennifer's Body, and she's done a lot of television work. And that'll come up a little bit in the description, but she's also worked with Phil Hay and Matt Manfredi, who wrote the screenplay together.
It stars Logan Marshall Green, who you might recognize from Prometheus. He's playing the character of Will, but I like to think he's a cross between Tom Hardy and John Barenthal. Like, if they had a baby together, they would be this man, this Logan Marshall Green.
I don't see the John Barenthal thing, but this guy's he's good in his own right.
He looks like a guy from Kings of Leon. Kinda. That's
yeah,
for sure.
With the beard. Yeah. I've not seen this actor with that much facial hair before. So it does kind of take you a second to like pierce through
right.
with your eyes and oh there.
No, there you are.
He's the handsome doctor from Prometheus.
Yeah, I didn't recognize him at all, but I'm along for the ride. Also starring Tammy Blanchard from Moneyball and The Good Shepherd, she plays Eden, who used to be Will's wife, but now after a couple years, she has this new husband.
Is it a couple years? It's been a while
been
since everybody's seen them.
It's been 2 years.
Yeah, she went away.
Yeah. Eden's married to David, who is played by Michelle Wiseman from Orphan Black. Get ready, because there's even more names, so just stick with us here. John Carroll Lynch shows up. He does an amazing monologue. I always love monologues from John Carroll Lynch.
Yeah. In the theme of peculiar names, his name is Pruitt.
Yeah,
but John Carroll Lynch people probably know from Zodiac, where he plays Arthur Lee Allen, and in The Walking Dead, in the first half of this season, he's the guy who teaches Morgan how to stick fight and Aikido.
And he gives multiple monologues during that Walking Dead show as well.
That's all monologue.
Like, can you imagine? His auditions have to be so easy because everyone just gives him monologues all the time. He just, like, takes his reel in there. So there you go.
I can do this sitting down. It's okay.
I don't need another actor. I'll do it myself.
And I was really happy to see Jay Larson as part of the cast. He is a stand-up comic whose podcast with Ryan Sickler, The Crab Feast, has been in my rotation for several years. He's a really funny guy and an especially great storyteller. He mentioned he was working on this project called The Invitation. I had no idea it was going to be like a suspense horror movie. But yeah, that was really exciting. The synopsis of the film goes as follows. This is one of the better IMDb synopses.
Maybe these people actually wrote it for themselves.
I think they probably did. While attending a dinner party at his former home, a man thinks his ex-wife and her new husband have sinister intentions for their guests.
Sums it up. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I think that you know what? It might even say a little more than I would have liked it to, but that's the difficulty with this film is that it's going to be very hard to talk about without giving away spoilers for major elements. My most abbreviated review is that it's good and it's worth seeing.
Yeah, it is good. It is really good. I will say it's a slow, slow burn. Absolutely slow. And I did spend a decent amount of the movie thinking, why did we get the screener? Because I was enjoying the movie and I was enjoying the character development and the interactions with the other characters. But it did take me a little while, and then I go, oh, ha, there's a certain scene in particular, and then everything goes crazy, and it's like, oh, this is why. This is why we were given this film. Excellent. Great. Thank you.
So even, like, probably a solid 45 minutes into the movie, I started to feel like I was losing my patience, and which isn't to say that, like, it's bad or boring.
Mm-mm.
But the characters and the situation they're put in. So we talked about it a little bit. This is a dinner party for Eden and her new husband, which most of these people are meeting for the first time.
Nobody seen her.
I ran into her and David at a supermarket. A little bit after that, I heard they disappeared.
And they met in the grief group.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were still married. Yeah, I guess you could have put odds on our divorce.
No.
That's as much as we know. So Eden and David are setting up this evening. They've clearly got an agenda, and that's kind of the first half of the movie is trying to figure out, like, what the
what
fuck
are you
are
selling
they up
right
to?
Now? Yeah.
And so for the first half hour, you're still kind of nervously watching, like, is this going to break out into an orgy? What are they, what are they trying to get these people to do?
It goes many different ways, because you do have this feeling at first. You're like, is this like, you know, like Avon or Amway? Like, what's happening? And then some...
Right, it's timeshares at the end of this.
Yeah, and then some like kind of sexy shit happens, and you're like, oh, it's going to be one of these kind of parties. But it's not, listener. Yeah, it's not that kind of party.
Intercut with those interpersonal moments, and you get little bits. Will is our main character, and so he's more often than not the lens by which we are seeing the scene, but you do get asides here and there, and you also get these flashback moments where it lets in some light to the tragedy that befell Will and Eden.
Right.
And, you know, we start off the story. She's married to some other dude. She's living in their old house, and that comes with its own emotional baggage. But they have been apart for a long time. And so one of the running themes of the movie is the idea of, like, dealing with grief.
Right.
And it's very interesting that people get very judgmental about how other people process grief.
I was just telling Will that pain is optional.
It is? Why didn't anyone tell me that before now?
I know. But it's actually really simple. All those negative emotions, grief, anger, depression, it's all just chemical reactions. It's entirely physical and it's completely changeable.
Kind of sound like a pamphlet there.
You can actually expel those emotions from your body and live the life you want to live.
Yeah, because the movie is about dealing with grief, but at the same time, it's about dealing with the people while you're dealing with grief. Like dealing with, because they have to deal with these friends. And a lot of the friends, you find out, even with Will, kind of just let him do his own thing. And they were not good friends. They were not helpful friends because it was easier for them to just be away.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's like really about how people react when something tragic happens.
Yeah. And Will being our lens, I pretty much saw eye to eye. There are paranoid elements to him, which I think are specific to me being kind of like a cynical New Yorker who, if someone, you know, part of this cast is very LA and is very like woo-woo and would be more comfortable being uncomfortable than calling someone else out on acting strangely. And so they don't want to make a scene. Will doesn't give a fuck. Like, he's clearly still traumatized.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's not really balanced. And they talk about it. He's debating whether or not he should be going at all.
Firstly, well, that's the whole thing with this whole thing. That's the whole thing with this whole thing. And that's what I'll say. Because if I was at this party, I would have left like 5 minutes in. And if I was Will, I wouldn't even have gone to the party. Why are we even entertaining this? Like, so many times in my note, I was like, why are they still here?
Yeah, and one of the characters does kind of decide. And it's funny, it's not one of the triggers that I thought would have sent people away, but one of the characters is just like, fuck this, I'm out.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, that's a reasonable response to what was going on.
I was like, finally, someone's doing the right thing, getting the fuck out. Because early on, as soon as almost everyone, except for Choi, where the fuck is Choi? I don't know where he went. We spend a lot of the movie looking and asking where Choi went. But as soon as everyone but Choi shows up, David, the husband, locks the door and locks them in and tells everyone, oh, well, this is for your safety.
Yeah, there have been home invasions in the neighborhood.
So now everyone's locked in and there's bars all over the windows that Will notices have been added later. And so it's a little, that's mad shady. I'm not going to be in there.
No. And the moment someone evades my line of questioning, and it's funny that it's the nature of like television storytelling where characters are just stopped short of communicating greater meaning or what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that inevitably leads up to like terrible things that didn't necessarily need to happen if they had just been honest and forthright.
Right.
So when I see that shit happen in films that are, you know, naturalistic and recognizable, I call bullshit. Like, no, don't play along. This is a terrible thing. But all these people, again, going to the idea of
because you don't want to be rude.
They will judge behind these people's backs. But to their face, they're just like, well, this is weird, but sure, whatever you want to do, however you're processing your grief.
I don't know if it's exactly like that, because since I grew up in the Midwest, but now I'm like, I've spent a lot of my life out here now. I feel like you just don't want to be rude. That's the thing. In the Midwest, you just never want to be rude. So, like, if crazy shit's happening, to someone's face. So, like, you'd be like, this is fucking crazy, as soon as they leave the room, and talk amongst yourselves. But as soon as they come back in, be like, oh, cool, we're going to just lock the door. Oh, okay, now we're going to play this weird version of I Never. Okay.
Yeah, I really did like the moments between Will and Ben, played by Jay Larson, who... Jay Larson's not the comic relief. He's clearly, that's not his role, but he's just a funny guy. And, you know, how he comes about lines is funny. But when they are to themselves off to the side and they're just like, what the fuck is going on? And it's like, I don't know, dude, I've been here for a while and
it's something fucking weird.
Up, but they're not talking about it.
Right.
And yeah, those moments were kind of like, those were for the viewer that like, you're not crazy. Something's up.
But I can see it from the viewpoint of the other characters where you see something is up, but you just, you know, in the Midwest, the worst thing you want to do is be rude.
Yeah, and make a scene.
Yeah, you certainly don't want to make a scene. That's what you go home and you yell at each other in the car for, but you would never make the scene at the place.
So the story starts out with Will and his girlfriend, Kira, and they're driving to the house. But once they're at the house, that's where we are for the rest of the film. And it's this gorgeous house in the Hollywood Hills that it's got a pool. It's got a balcony. Everything else feels a little claustrophobic away
it's
from that.
It's very dark.
It's a dim movie. It struck me that it must have been a tremendous pain in the ass, because it seems like most of the lighting of the film was room lighting. And so there's no overhead lighting. And it's funny, but another note in terms of the cinematography, I'm a DVD nerd and I've listened to God knows how many commentary tracks. And it's a regular thing where directors talk about the frastration of filming something as, you know, standard as like a dining room scene and getting all these people across from each other and getting coverage for all those moments and all those cutaways. Like, each one of those is a different camera setup.
Right.
And so it's a huge, this movie is all that.
Yeah.
Like, with the exception of these moments where two characters might step aside, this movie is just like a group conversation over and over and over.
It is a room full of people.
So like, you know, kudos to the cinematographer and the director for really doing it well, because it's a very good looking movie. It's incredibly like warm and, you know, kind of comfortable. Although I like a lot of light. I don't know. I don't really like a dim room. It actually kind of puts me off.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. I think it's like cozy feeling that way. I don't want to like be in a hospital.
No, but I do like light. I don't
know. Can we rewind though to the very beginning of the film when Will and his girlfriend are driving to the party? And there is a scene, it doesn't spoil anything because it's literally in the first minute of the film, where they hit a coyote.
There are coyotes in the Hollywood
Hills. There are. They take people's dogs all the time. But it's one of the grossest, and like, it really made me like sick feeling. That scene was really, really well acted by everybody. Even the coyote.
It's weird. It's funny. We mostly get it from Kira's perspective from inside the car.
And she's great. She's actually really good. She doesn't actually say very much, the character of Kira. She doesn't talk too much. But she's actually very good, and she's very supportive of Will. And I think she's actually a really good character that's kind of overshadowed maybe by just so many people being in the movie.
Yeah. I think considering this group is... you know, a group of old friends, and she is really the only outsider. I would have liked to have seen more from her perspective, because she seems, I mean, I think her character is meant to be quite LA and that she's just trying to like play along and keep up, but she's less sensitive about recognizing like these uncomfortable moments.
Right.
And she recognizes that Will is losing his mind every like 20 minutes, but she's not seeing what he's seeing, and she knows.
Because I think she's just uncomfortable the whole time through, so
you
she
think?
Doesn't.
Yeah.
Because she's always aside, and there very much in the very first part of the film, everyone's sitting and she's like standing back.
Yeah.
Well, because Will's being crazy. Yeah. You know, so she's got to like stand back and be like supportive of that. So I think she's just so uncomfortable. She doesn't notice some of the other things because her focus and always it's like a laser focus is on Will in every scene.
Yeah. And I think judging by how Will treats his shared tragedy with Eden, he's not a talker.
Mm-mm.
He's not one to overshare and probably explain to his new girlfriend that like things got really grim and I'm still processing. Like he just doesn't talk about it.
Right.
So she doesn't know as much as the group knows just in terms of their relationship and what came before. So yeah, I don't know. I did like that actress quite a bit. I wish they had given her a little more to do.
I hope that we see her in some more things, though, because I think she's great. And in these big, big ensemble films, it's easy to lose track of people.
Yeah.
So I thought she was really great.
Yeah. But this actually did do a good job of sort of giving all these characters backgrounds. And while they are a little cagey with like the full story and that you kind of have to watch to see it unfold, you do get a good sense of their personalities, each of them, except for Choi.
Yeah. Where is Choi?
Choi had a callback for the show Arrow. That's season two.
I kept waiting for him. Where's Choi?
Actually, season three. My mistake. But yeah, I think a lot of the actors are recognizable. You recognize one of the actors from the movie Circle.
It's yeah.
On Netflix now.
One of the guys who, there are two guys in a couple. I think only one of them really is kind of friends with Will, but then the other, you know, you can kind of get that feeling. And I had just watched the movie Circle, and then this guy showed up, and I was like, ah, it's you again, old friend. The music in this is actually really helps to move it along, and I think it also keeps it from being too muddled with all those people, because there's not entirely that much speaking. I mean, they're doing a lot of talking to each other, but there's a lot of silent moments that's filled by music in there.
Yeah.
The music's done by Theodore Shapiro. I almost called him Ted, like I was best friends with him.
My pal Ted Shapiro.
Theodore Shapiro did the music, and he's actually currently composed for the new Ghostbusters movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he's doing the music for that. And it is a scored piece that goes with the entire film.
The score, now while I'm not comparing it to, I will say it's got some similarities with, say, like actually John Carpenter's The Thing in terms of these simple rising notes.
Yep.
And it seems pretty rare that you get more than two elements overlapping. So what Mindy was saying a minute ago in terms of helping these scenes move along, it also does the like very delicate job of not overdoing it or say telegraphing or competing with the dialogue on screen.
And it adds to that tension because you almost, I would want to listen to it again, but I would say probably for the first 40 minutes, nothing resolves. No chords ever resolve again, and you're just building tension. It's like in Wagner and sometimes Beethoven, where you just spend like 10 minutes being like, just go to the 5-1. Go to the 5-1. Let's resolve that. Let's get back to tonic. Because it makes you, as someone who lives in the Western world and listens to Western music, you don't even know you're doing it, but you really want that tonic and you want that resolution. And I would say probably 40 minutes go by, there's barely any resolution going on.
Wow. And that was Mindy's music corner.
Yay.
You say tonic, and I know pentatonic and I know gin and tonic, but I'll take your word for it. All right, on the phone, I've got Jay Larson. He's a comedian and host with Ryan Sickler of the Crab Feast podcast that I've been a fan of for, I guess, over a year now. You guys been doing it for three? How long?
Yeah, we just had our 200th episode.
200.
So we're on our fourth year. On the 4 years now.
Nice. And I know you've worked
I'm no mathematician, but...
So you've worked on your own projects as well, writing, directing. Is this your first feature film?
Kind of, yeah. I did, if you want to call it a feature film, about 8 years ago, 9 years ago, which really wasn't a feature film. This was the first professional with legit actors, legit director, the whole deal. So, yeah, It's my first feature.
How did you get involved with the project? Did you audition?
Yeah, I did, actually. It wasn't really an audition. She just basically, I went to set, and we met, and we just almost had like an interview, you know? We just talked, and we just talked about the role. I had read the script, and I told her what I thought about the script, what I thought about the character, how I thought, like, you know, he would handle certain situations and stuff like that, and I think she really liked my grasp of who he was and how he fit into the movie, you know. So it wasn't an audition where you go in and you're doing lines. She was taking it more from a perspective of someone who understood the character, and that's how it all went down. So cool. It was a kind of an awesome opportunity to just be able to sell yourself that way in your understanding and of the script and the character, you know. So much of the time you go in and you just audition for things, and you know, it can depend on the day you're having or how you interpret the character versus the people that wrote it. So I was very fortunate to have that interview to be a part of the movie.
Yeah, I would imagine, considering the cast are supposed to be longtime friends, that you kind of, yeah, it would make more sense that your audition would be more of a conversation, sort of getting a sense of the environment and the scenario and the people, and rather than, like, you know, reading lines and going verbatim.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because, yeah, it takes place in one house. So we shot in one location for a month. So, you know, one of the things Karin said to me during the interview was, she's like, listen, this is going to be like a close quarters kind of set. We don't need any drama. You know, we want people to, you know, everyone, no egos here. And I'm like, you're definitely not going to get ego out of me. And we all were really close. And it was a pretty amazing experience because we were all sharing one dressing room, and, you know, it wasn't a huge budget, but there was a good amount of money, and the actors in it are, I mean, amazing, amazing actors. So everyone dropped their ego at the door because everybody wanted to work with Karin, obviously. And the writers are, you know, Phil and Matt are, you know, they've done some amazing things. At top to bottom, it was just, everyone was like, yeah, you know, you take certain jobs because of the people you get the chance to work with, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about your character a little bit. You play Ben, and Logan, is it Marshall Green? Logan Marshall Green?
Yeah. Logan Marshall Green, yeah.
He plays William, and it's funny, we've been really delicate about reviewing the movie and not giving away stuff, but suffice to say, you two guys have some of the only moments where you kind of question what the hell's going on pretty early in the movie. Like, you smell something's up. And I was curious, the movie's very, I mean, I'm not saying it overly critical, but, like, it is very L.A., and it kind of plays with this element of how uncomfortable people will let themselves get before they say something or make a scene. And you two guys kind of stand out as, like, having the best instincts. I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm originally from Massachusetts, and I've lived in New York for a couple of years, and I've been in L.A. for almost 15 years now. I've never thought of it like that, where that is LA. That is what people do. They're like, I'll just deal with this until I should say something, which is classic. Well, you know, I think the thing is like, we were best friends and we had a business together. That's kind of like where we were as friends in the movies.
Has she been acting like this all night?
Yeah, David too. Look, I'm all for whatever you gotta do to get by, especially you two with what you went through, but you didn't lose your mind?
I didn't.
Not like that.
I think the two of us, you know, when he went through what he went through in his, you know, backstory, I kind of had a, you know, was in tune with that. And Logan and I really clicked on the set. He's a jokester, and obviously I'm a comedian, so we hit it off. And there was just, like, this natural thing where the two of us would, like, check in with each other because we kind of just went back to the way we were, you know, 2 years before this dinner party was happening. So, yeah, we had fun with that. We were always, because I got a chance to almost, like, you know, be who I am, because I would, in that situation, I would make jokes about it. And I wasn't making jokes verbally to people because I want to respect them as Ben would, but to look over it at Will was, that was where our connection lied, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that was some of the most fun. I, you know, I don't think anyone would go so far as to say it was comic relief, but it was like a human relief that, like, you know, sort of break the tension from time to time. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Like, my character was supposed to be, I don't think they ever wrote him as comic relief, but, you know, naturally there's always going to be someone in your group that's the funniest. So I think my character was that character, and I had some of the funniest lines in the movie. But when you, I mean, did you see the movie?
Yeah.
Okay, so you saw, there were some funny moments that, not for me, that, like, I remember, like, sitting in the audience in the theater and being like, oh, man, I love that everyone gets that, because that is hilarious.
Yeah.
Coming from, you know, because Mike Doyle, who's in it, who's a super, super talented actor, plays Tommy, he was so funny. He was hilarious. And not even trying to be. He's just being, that, you know, some of the best comedy is when you're playing it straight, so.
It's funny, I'm just thinking the dynamic of, like, you getting along really well with the cast, but then the moment the director calls action, Will has got to be in such a specific headspace of, like, just, like, sort of almost tense paranoia that I don't know. I would imagine it takes some, like, revving up before that moment.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, sitting there and watching Logan go through what he goes through in that movie, like, in between takes, it was unbelievable. I gained so much respect for him just watching him go through his process. And we all kind of, like, had to have moments where, like, you just didn't talk to him. Like he's in the middle of a no-hitter or something. Because he, you know what I mean? Like, cause he was having these crazy moments. And they're super intense, man. That movie's intense. They would call cut and we would, like, all walk off. And we would just be shook for a little bit. Like, Jesus. Like... And something that really, that the producers talked a lot about was we were all so loose when we were not shooting and joking around, and everybody was kind of like, we had so many running gags going, it allowed everyone to really open themselves up when the camera started rolling, because we had built this trust amongst the group, you know, and we were able to kid around and joke, you know, something that, I don't know, it just happened organically on its own, the environment that was created for us to play in, you know, gave everyone that freedom to really open themselves up when we start shooting.
Oh, I can't believe you're really here.
This is my friend Pruitt.
Now, when the dynamic changes, when John Carroll Lynch comes in, John Carroll Lynch is playing Pruitt. He is an outsider. What I'm curious what that was like on set, because he changes the energy immediately. And he's,
dude,
he's an unknown quantity.
Is amazing.
Yeah.
He's amazing. I know exactly what you're talking about. There's actually, I won't give it away for anyone, but he has a line that is so funny. And every time he would give the line, I mean, it's not funny. It's just, he was so strong. And, like, he's just such a huge presence.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, but he's so talented. I mean, again, another actor who, I mean, that guy was in Crazy Stupid Love, you know, I mean, that guy was in Fargo, for crying out loud. He's so, the guy's legit.
Yeah.
It's definitely that turning point in the movie where you're like, okay, I just think they did such an amazing job in the writing and Karen and how she pieced everything together to keep you guessing and wondering. And John was that turning point. I don't know. I just get lost a little bit thinking about the movie because they just did an amazing job with it. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm curious. What was he like on set?
Amazing. Such a sweet guy, and he's super intelligent, and always had something to talk about. And you know, it was, we had, like, all the guys were in one room. That's where we would change every day. And like, there was World Cup going on, and Mikael Houshman, you know, he's Dutch, and the Dutch team was playing, so we'd have the game on the internet. We'd be, like, watching it, and then we had to go shoot, so we'd pause it, and everybody would root for them because that was his team. You know, there was always something. Everyone was in different stages or things happening in their life. Like, Mike Doyle, at the time, the New York premiere of Jersey Boys was coming out, and he was in Jersey Boys. He's got a huge role in Jersey Boys, so he had to he was not going to be there for 2 days because he's going to be at the premiere, so we're all waiting for him to get back to talk about the premiere. I mean, there was so many things going on. It was a pretty wild experience for everybody.
So we mentioned that you've made your own films. Do you have a favorite role in terms of, like, you know, not the actual characters you're playing, but the positions you're taking?
Yeah, I think acting's, it's a lot of fun. I think it's a lot more challenging. Put it this way. If I was a Major League Baseball, if my acting, we could compare it to Major League Baseball, I'd be batting 240. You know what I mean? Maybe I hit a home run every now and then. I make a nice play in the outfield where people are like, oh man, look at the talent that could have been. You know what I mean? But like, you take guys like Logan and Mikhail and John and Emiyazi and Tammy, they're like, you know, they're all stars. They're like amazing. They all have such an incredible resume. I like writing, for me, you know, as a comedian is kind of my wheelhouse, because I just don't know if I can go to the places that they're able to go. And, you know, if you've ever watched Amazing Acting, which we all have, you just, to see it like firsthand when I did doing that, it was pretty intense to see like what people were capable of. And I gave everything I could, and I think I did a really good job, but I just don't know if I have the capability to go where they go. So I love acting, especially when you realize that when you're acting, someone wrote these words. I just had an opportunity I'm in the new season of Twin Peaks.
No shit.
Which is David Lynch. And I mean, I was sitting with, I have a kid that works for me sometimes, and we were sitting there and I was working on my sides, and he looked over at me, he goes, "You realize David Lynch wrote those words that you're reading right now?" And just like, and I didn't, you know, I'm just like, oh yeah, that's true. And it's like, you know, when you see a movie, you just watch a movie. Like, oh, that was a lot of, you know, people are critical. That was fun that they rip it apart. And then you just don't forget that, like, somebody wrote it. Somebody had to go out and get money for it. Somebody had to put, some people sold their house to get it done. You have all these people that work on this one thing. And so for me, when people think that they want you in the thing that they want to create, there's such a, you know, an honor in it. So, you know, it's like sometimes you go to a restaurant that might not be the best food in the world, but it's owned by like the sweetest couple, and you know when you eat there, it helps, you know, pay their bills. So I don't, that's a tough analogy. I don't know if that's even an analogy. But you know, sometimes you want to be a part of things because of the people that are doing them. You know.
Yeah, that's great. That's really cool news about Twin Peaks. Congratulations on that.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you. That's going to be a wild ride, I think.
Yeah. On the podcast, you had mentioned that you were working on this project called The Invitation. I didn't even connect the dots that it was like a suspense piece. You know, I kind of assumed it was going to be a comedy. And then I started watching the movie, and there you are on the couch. And I was like, holy shit, that's Jay Larson. It was a trip. But yeah, you were great in it. Yeah.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I mean, I was shocked too, you know, that when they told me about the audition, and they're like, it's just going to be a straight interview. They really like you. They think your sensibility really works. And I read the script, and I remember I went in my room, and I went into the bedroom, and I read it, and I came up to my wife, and I'm like, this thing is dope. And she goes, really? I'm like, yeah, this is sick. This is sick. And so I was like, I was geeked out. I was like, man, this would be so much fun to be a part of something like this. I mean, I was literally walking. There was this, one of the biggest, not biggest, but one of the jokes on set was like, you know, because we're shooting in one location, you block everything out so everyone knows where they're going and cameras know where they're going. And we were blocking out, it was like our first day, we're blocking out this scene, and the scene ends with my character, you know, just kind of saying like, what the fuck, and then just hesitating and then walking off. And the walking off, it's not in the dialogue, it's just in like, you know, the stage direction. And so we're just blocking it out, we're doing the scene, and I walk off, and everyone falls out laughing at me. And I'm like, what's everybody laughing at? And they're like, the fact that you're doing stage direction. What are you doing walking out? Like, they're like, apparently that's not something you do. And Karen was laughing. She's like, make a meal out of it. Make a meal out of it. You know, like, take every little thing that's in that text and turn it into something. And then we kept doing the scene. You know, we did it like 10 times, and everybody just waited for me to walk out. Like, they were just waiting and waiting. And, you know, it was like, I mean, Mikhail's in Game of Thrones, you know what I mean? He's a huge character in Game of Thrones. And I would be doing scenes, we'd be shooting, and he'd be looking at me from off camera, making faces, trying to make me laugh in the middle of this crazy thriller. And we do the scene, then call cut, and I walk over, and I go, "Look, dude, what are you doing?" And he goes, "I love fucking with you, man." So it was like, you know, you kind of had to have that element going on where we found the humor and stuff because it was such an intense piece.
Yeah, it's funny to hear that considering, yeah, the tone for probably the first like 45 minutes of the movie is just like a series of waves of like build and release and build and release. And yeah, it's really effective. I mean, it's like almost taxing to watch. And you know,
oh
and,
man, it is. It yeah. is. It drains. Like you're in the theater and you're just like, oh man, what, you know, because they just slow play you. So,
yeah. So
yeah.
Winding down, I'm curious. Are you a horror movie fan?
I love getting scared. It's one of my favorite things. So I will, and I jump on board. You know, like when Blair Witch Project came out, everyone was like, "Nah, it's not real." I'm like, "Just shut up. Just believe it. Go into it believing it and let it be." So I do. I'm not like you know, I have two kids now, so I don't like wait for like horror movies and go out to see them, and my wife does not dig horror movies. So, you know, when you're married, you kind of got to decide what we're going to watch. So I don't get to see as many, but I love getting scared in real life, and I love scaring people in real life and in films as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the movie is really effective. I suppose the last 20 minutes of the film don't let you go. And I was really impressed. I you know, like I said, the first 45 minutes, you're not sure where it's going. You do not know what to expect. And by the time it ends, you're just kind of like, you're exhausted because you've been holding your breath and breathing heavy. It's it was a really impressive work. I'm excited for this. All right. So this will be coming out Monday. Is there anything you want to promote?
As always, check out the Crab Feast podcast. You can go to thecrabfeast.com. It comes out every Tuesday with a new guest. And if anyone's out there in Nashville, I'm going to be out there in May, which will be nice, on the 20th, doing stand-up with Nick Thune, Rory Scovel, and Nate Bargatze. Other than that, I'm just, everything else is kind of in a holding pattern until I get the yeses from certain people that have more authority than me.
Cool, man.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Jay. Have a good one.
All right. Take care.
So in terms of recommending the movie, I think I have no hesitation to call this a good movie and say it is worth a watch.
Definitely worth a watch.
That said, it is going to cater more to, say, like a patient viewer who,
yes,
if you liked Rosemary's Baby, if you appreciate the slow build of, you know, tension, and right, this has that in waves, I think you should check it out. I was thinking in terms of like similar films of get-togethers. There's like your House on Haunted Hill. Mm-hmm. There was a terrible movie also called The Invitation in 2003 with Lance Henriksen, which it's on Netflix streaming. Don't see it. It's terrible. It's a terrible film. It looks like Canadian public access television.
I feel like I could have told you that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm pretty good at recognizing, looking at a cover of a film, like, oh, that's bad.
In all fairness, I knew it was going to be bad.
I would say, though, if you like long, tense moments or like a really, really slow burn, I would suggest something like The Guest or The Sacrament, you know, okay, as well. Yeah. Like, so if you liked those kind of films, then you would like this.
Yeah. Initially, you joked about why was this movie offered to us to see and discuss, because it is not a traditional horror movie by any stretch. But like the movies you mentioned,
it's one that you just have to watch and sort of, you know, it doesn't take work on your part necessarily because these characters are engaging and the right. story is unfolding. But it is not, you know, it's not an action horror movie.
No, there's if you're no looking for a hack 'em up, this is not it.
This is a very like personal story. And we talked about the sort of running themes of grief and judgment and everything that comes from that. So yeah, I don't know if these things sound appealing to you. Absolutely. Check it out. it is out April 8th.
Yeah.
You've been listening to The Rant Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario, that's me, and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rant Macabre, contact Ken at fangoria.com. That's it for me. This is Darren, signing off.
And I'm Mindy. Thanks.